Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like wrestling? This week in the news, AEW suspends Britt Baker in the Lazy River, preview of SummerSlam, and Invader Club this week, Hanson and Brody taking on Jumbo Tsuruta and Tenryu. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. The news is going to be sparse because everybody has Olympic fever, so the numbers don't matter. You been watching any of these games, Chris?
No. Okay. I haven't had cable television since I have been an adult.
You do have a login to Peacock, though.
That is true. I always forget about that. I've actually been watching The X-Files.
Okay.
I just got through season one. I'm starting season two. I've forgotten how much I'd enjoy this show and how, like, it does, it scratches a bunch of itches kind of concurrently. Yeah,
never watched an episode of it. I don't like science fiction, so
It's science fiction, but it's also like government intrigue.
Yeah, you
know, dudes in suits, you know, doing nasty things to each other for the government.
I do like even some jingoistic pride of watching just sports where people spend their whole lives and there's no money in it. You're just like, I am really excellent at team handball, and you're just like, yeah, this sport's kind of cool.
Olympic handball is very cool.
Team handball is fun. The women's rugby bronze medal game, the end of that, is one of the most awe-inducing sports moments I've ever seen, where it's like there's no time left, and the American breaks a tackle and runs like 94 yards to tie it up, and then the kick is what wins the game, and the Australians are just crying because they've blown this. But yeah, no, the Olympics are fun. I'm also reminded as a kid they used to have something called the triple cast, where it's like they tried to sell the Olympics on pay-per-view, where you had three different channels doing different sports in addition to the NBC broadcast of the Summer Olympics. I was like, there's a grift, and now I can get all that. I can get any sport I want on Peacock. That's the one thing that it's good. So you can watch your judo or your shooting. Oh, that's the other one. There was a Turkish shooter. Like all these kids have these like funny face things to concentrate their sight on stuff when they're shooting their pistols. There's this Turkish dude, has glasses and a t-shirt, about my age, pistol, wins the silver, and his story is he took up pistol shooting when he was going through a contentious divorce. So, and his comment was, "I want my dog back." It was just the best. There are just stories like that throughout. But, the reason I bring that up is because the numbers for viewership don't matter because WWE was on Sci-Fi and my DVR forgot to record Raw. I did get to watch NXT. AEW was down around 600,000 for the week. So, you know, the Olympics are killing everything. And it wasn't like anybody was putting in major effort, although I did like NXT this week. We'll talk about that in the Lazy River. But first, the news. Britt Baker was suspended for either 1 or 2 weeks and fined by the AEW's disciplinary committee. I'm reading from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer. Details have been kept pretty quiet, but it came from something backstage at the July 17th Dynamite, where Baker allegedly said something about MJF and Alicia Tout. MJF's girlfriend heard it and told him, and he confronted Baker. This led to an investigation with HR. Talking to people on July 24th, I believe the disciplinary committee that did the investigation recommended that. That's Dave opining, and this is more of him. I don't know if Tony Khan was or wasn't involved in this, and everyone is attempting to keep this under wraps. This all stems from problems in the past that weren't addressed, and a committee was put together to settle these things quickly. Most of those we heard from were sympathetic to her in this situation. Britt's been going through some things. Some things you know, some things you don't, some things I can never tell on this program. That said, Britt's also been a bit of a problem. Some things you know, some things you don't know, and some things I can never tell on this show. But this also goes to one of Chris's greater points, and this is why I'm teeing up this story, is that this is a company that doesn't have a strong structure in terms of having, how shall we put this, negative incentive to behave in some ways. I'll leave it at that. Chris, you got any thoughts on this?
So, I mean, the nature of the comments are, of course, paramount to a full assessment of what Britt Baker did here and why she did it. Given the limited details, but the nature of the response, either it was like an off-color remark about the girlfriend or MJF and Britt.
I have a little bit more information on what it was about.
Okay.
Apparently, it was an offhand remark during the MJF Will Ospreay 60-minute match or so. And Alicia Tout was in the room. It wasn't about them necessarily. It was about something to do with television and him and or something. And it was like an offhand remark during the match or something. And she went and told MJF.
Okay, so then if that is the name, I mean, barring the comment from Britt Baker being wildly incendiary to the point that I can't say it on the air, wouldn't that make the girlfriend, who is not an employee nor a talent on the television,
she is an employee.
Oh, she is.
She got hired as a backstage interview a couple weeks ago.
Oh, geez, Louise.
For Ring of Honor. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Great. All right. So, like, we have sort of
Let me reread the last sentence. Most of those we heard from were sympathetic to, I believe the her is Brit in
Brit.
This situation.
Right. Right. It sounds like MJF.
Some stuff was stirred is
right.
What it sounds,
it sounds like
to me.
MJF's girlfriend went and stirred the pot. And I think, you know, going back to the questions about management, then this managerial response against Britt Baker seems uncalled for and like weirdly in favor of MJF and his behavior, which
I'll go a little bit more because there were rumblings that there was an issue backstage a couple weeks ago that MJF had quote unquote gotten into a fight.
Let me just ask you a yes or no question. Does this have anything at all to do with, and I'm not joking around here.
I may not know either, so go ahead.
Does this have anything at all to do with like anti-Semitism or something like that?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Right, okay, then if it doesn't, right, like that's like the only thing that I can think of that would justify going and saying something to MJF and then having that escalate. Like if I was,
it's you know, odd, MJF, isn't it? Because
right,
he went like, to, he also went to HR about it. He did.
Right.
I mean, he confronted her and then he went to HR, and so it would have to be something
substantive.
Substantive,
right.
Yeah.
That's,
to
that's
me.
Why I was asking the previous question.
No, it's not the
like
worst question in the world either, Chris.
No,
it is,
no.
But I don't know what happened.
I think it's something that rises to the nature of these actions and being like butthurt that somebody said something about like you behind your back, requiring you to go to HR. It's got to be a thing. You know, it would have to be it, like if it's not a substantive thing, then this beclowns MJF at like an all-time level. And given the fact that the general support seems to be with Britt and not MJF, my gut, based on everything I've got here, is that this does beclown MJF if we could, you know, see what the results of this were. But I don't know right
well,
now.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. Just a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. Because we went through Brawl Out. We went through all these things, and what were we told? Well, don't handle it yourself. The company has a structure involved to settle these types of disputes and things. So maybe his first reaction after maybe yelling at Britt after hearing about this or whatever is to go to HR and go, Tony or somebody please handle this. Or something like that. I don't know. I can't. I think you're mostly correct, but I can see a path through where MJF was taking the quote. Well, after initially possibly getting into a shouting match or something, going, you know what? I'm just gonna let the company handle this. But I can't think of something that would be said that would be so.
That's why I asked the anti-Semitism.
Like, I can take a lot of crap, I'm never gonna
right?
HR. Yeah.
Right. Like. Yeah. As far as we know, Britt and MJF were never dating or anything, right?
To my knowledge, no. She
right?
had been
so
dating
like,
Adam Cole possibly, this time.
Right. She was with Adam. She's been with Adam Cole. So I'm like, what could it possibly be? I just can't come up with anything. And so then that brings me back to, I guess, a criticism of Tony Khan using a suspension here, when clearly what is in order is a strategic deployment of the song of healing known as Kumbaya, Jeff. It's Kumbaya.
Oh, Lord.
Kumbaya. Kumbaya. Yeah. MJF, Britt, they sit down. They sing a little bit, you know, someone's wrestling, my Lord. Kumbaya.
And then the Young Bucks come and goes, oh, it's a Christian song. Come on in.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone can sit down and sing. One of the problems with AEW's management structure is a lack of reported sing-alongs. And I don't care if they're having them quietly and not leaking them to Meltzer. These should be publicized.
Yeah. Check your Instagram message. This is just for the back of your mind, but it'll give you a little bit more information as well. Incidentally, AEW, a photo of Tony Khan with Shane McMahon got leaked. On July 31st, the two met on July 29th in Arlington, Texas. Details unknown, but Shane's people are saying, hey, we had a great meeting. We talked about our love of the business, etc., etc. Everybody is doing reckless speculation on what this could possibly mean. And I'm going to take Occam's razor and say that this might be either an appearance during Bryan Danielson's retirement, because those two words kind of joined at the hip for a while as SmackDown GMs, etc. Or it could be just as simple as Shane McMahon's been bothering me for a meeting for a long, long time, so I decided to have a meeting with him, and that's the end of it. If you want to go more off the beaten path, Shane McMahon's kid has been training. Might be looking for some, hey, what non-WWE places could I send my kid so that the stain of being a McMahon can't be? But overall, I don't see any... I see a one-week spike in ratings if you plug Shane McMahon on the TV program, but as a creative force backstage or as an on-screen presence, I don't see a lot of value in him. And I think it would there'd be a certain portion of the fan base, of course, that would just go, no, we don't want this. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, the best deployment of Shane McMahon is also the worst deployment
yes.
of Shane McMahon, which is why I'm laughing. Like, he would be stellar as the babyface general manager to countermand the Bucks executive vice president. He would be way better in this role than Tony Khan has ever been. Tony Khan just has a certain quality about him that is not likable on screen. Shane McMahon has a certain quality about him that even at this age is still just sort of like inherently charming. Like, Shane's just an inherently likable guy. But then you have the problem of having a McMahon on your television. And, you know, does that help distinguish AEW from WWE, or does that instead point a finger back to one of the more maligned figures in wrestling over the last like decade?
God knows I don't want an office politics story with a McMahon involved in AEW. Please do
I know. I'm saying the best deployment of him is also the worst deployment of him.
I don't want to see him back in the ring. New collision general manager.
Yeah. Him and Danielson are reunited as GMs.
Oh, God, no.
No, this culminates in a match against the Young Bucks.
And I could see him getting super... I could see them also going the petty route and going, hey, we could stick it to WWE, and I'll take a couple super kicks from the Bucks, and then we'll do like a... I'll be part of like Stadium Stampede or something like that. I could fall off something tall again. I just know there's nothing in this. Please don't. Any other thoughts?
I just don't want to see Shane. I like Shane. I don't want to see
overall
Shane
too.
In AEW. I don't think he helps. I think he still has a place back in WWE as a non-wrestler.
Yeah.
As a mouthpiece. And I don't think that his father's horribleness should be held against him in any way, shape, or form, especially when this is a guy who divested himself of like all of the stock
yes.
when it was $20 a share back in 2009. So, it was a stupid move. But I think that the flip of that is he washed his hands of this company in a serious way at various points. And yes, he's still done some business, but he's always arm's length the operation, and he wanted to do his own thing for a good long period of time, and I don't think because of that, I think, you know, there should be some reward. You can't hold his dad against
I figured it out, Chris.
What?
AEW Underground. He's gonna have an underground pit fighting company in the middle of AEW wrestling.
Oh, dude, this is great. what do you do? You keep the ring canvas, but you remove all the ropes, and then you have everyone backstage just around there. Make it feel kind of like a pit fight. Here's what I would do, though. Here's what I'd do to kind of ramp it up. Strippers.
Is that how you'd ramp it up?
Yeah, I'd ramp it up.
Al Blake, who had a seventh-month run as a push star in Jim Crockett Promotions, as Vladimir Petrov passed away this past week. He was 66. This was you think experiments fail now in wrestling? Let me tell you, kids, about Vladimir Petrov. Minnesota guy. brought in basically the same way Nikita Koloff, who was also from the same area, was brought in. They turned Nikita babyface, a team with Dusty, after Magnum's accident. And so we decided to bring in a much bigger Russian for Ivan Koloff to then mentor, because the first one worked so well. Vladimir Petrov stunk. Just could two left feet, didn't know how to wrestle, because Nikita didn't know how to wrestle when he was sent down to Crockett. But he learned quickly, and he learned how to do a sickle, so maybe Vladimir Petrov could. Nope. And so we have to watch this process for 7 months before we just decide, nope, this is not going to be our number one heel in the company to fight our baby faces. But, you know, rest in peace, nevertheless, one Al Blake. I'd ask if you'd ever seen Vladimir Petrov, but I doubt you have.
I have not.
Okay, don't seek it out. I think I might have brought this up. For Stardom, Anna Jay announced for the 5-star Grand Prix tournament. I'm here for this.
Good for her.
I am here for that. Yes. Yeah. We have been talking, sending her on excursion for a while. I think this is awesome.
Yeah.
Injury news. Sky Blue underwent surgery for a broken ankle on July 30th. Trent Beretta underwent neck surgery. That's why he's been off TV. He had come back from neck fusion surgery, but two of the screws from the prior surgery broke and had to be replaced.
Oh.
Oof. It's probably why Roosh is now in the Don Callis family, which I think is a much better fit. But nevertheless, prayers up to Trent Beretta.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And a couple of roster quote unquote moves that we haven't brought up. One's kind of old and one's kind of new. MXM Collection. Mason, I forgot he's now using another first name, and Mansoor are now in Ring of Honor /AEW. They were a part of Collision a couple weeks ago against FTR, and they were on the ROH pay-per-view this past weekend. They are doing a WWE gimmick, and they're doing it more to the hilt, and it got over in front of that Ring of Honor crowd on Friday. Good for them, because Mansoor is great. Mason, still a little bit of work to be done, but they're good personalities. They've been doing the podcast circuit. And then Mustafa Ali appears to be done with TNA. I think he is en route to AEW. He is playing up the the gimmick that they wouldn't let him do in WWE. And he sent out this giant letter today on social media, kind of like a presidential letter thing. And I am done with this gimmick. That's why I bookended these two together. I hope he doesn't bring this gimmick with him to AEW, but I still like Mustafa Ali a lot. Any thoughts on either of those two?
It just feels like Ali has been struggling for a long time to find his personality, and he always seems to come up with these personas that just overdo it. It's too much.
Because he was in a program with Dolph in TNA, he comes off a lot like Dolph in terms of his or Nick Nemeth in terms of his thoughts on his gimmick. Because it's like, all right, it's an idea, but it never goes anywhere after the idea. You know what I mean? It's like okay, you're going to play a politician here and you're going to campaign that you are, you know, underpushed or whatever. But after a while, it has to like evolve. And I never felt this gimmick evolved, you know?
No. There just has to be more depth and layers to the gimmick. Hello, Hayes.
Cats.
It's Hayes-y.
Cats say coming onto the screen.
Say something into the microphone, Hayes. No. Okay.
Let's see how it plays out. Oh my God. That'll do it for the news.
She's got better taste than that.
That'll do it for the news. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we had time to watch, whatever's on our mind is here. There is a PLE this weekend, the last of the single night Summer Slams for the immediate future. Enjoy this while it lasts, kids. Really. Live from Cleveland, Summer Slam. Tomorrow night, starting at 7, an earlier time call. Do not watch the 3-hour pre-show. There will be nothing worth it.
Oh my God. 3 hours of
pre-show?
What?
I don't know. They do this. But that said, for those who complained about the last card and the lack of build and matches that don't mean anything, 7 matches, all singles matches, all pretty important and all fairly well built, in my opinion. This feels, even though I'm not as hyped for it as most cards, but I'm not hyped for anything these days, so it may just be me. But I feel this has been a well-built card, if anything. And I'm sure people will be excited. We will start with the Intercontinental Championship. Sami Zayn, your champion, taking on Bron Breakker, a.k.a. Young Steiner. Chris, good feud. Your thoughts?
Oh, great feud. I think that Breakker's going over here.
Yeah, we're going to rectify the mistake we made last time, because he should have gone over last time. I don't know if the thick boy will be part of this in the finish in any way. I don't think he should be, even though he's been heavily involved in this feud.
Well, yeah, and so is Ilya. I mean, like...
Yes, but that's true, too.
I think, yes, we now have three quality younger guys in Ilya, Bronson, and Bron Breakker, who are more than capable of carrying the Intercontinental division and letting Sammy go on to do other things now. Sammy's awesome. Beating Gunther was a big deal, but you know, and that's really the more important thing here. He doesn't need an Intercontinental win. He needed a big signature win, and beating Gunther was that for him.
Yeah. He's pretty much Teflon now. Yeah. I mean, people love Sami Zayn as long as he's a babyface. Yeah. I think he's good. For the United States Championship, Logan Paul, who had some thoughts on Olympic boxing this week, taking on LA Knight. Think we're having another title change here. I think LA Knight's going to get a little bit of a run with his secondary title. Logan Paul's going to go off and do his other projects for a while and take a break from wrestling before coming back for maybe a Royal Rumble run.
I concur. I think this is, I mean, it's a must-win situation for LA Knight. He's the opposite of Sami Zayn. Like, he is very much teetering on the edge of Zigglerisms.
Yeah, well, he is catchphrases and entrance,
yep,
and nothing else right now, and he needs something. Right, yeah,
he needs something. And him as a champion, defending the belt, being a little bit of a babyface in peril, or perhaps putting a different spin on how his babyface title reign runs, where he's just the always smarter than the heels champion. That'd be an interesting way of getting
that's what's going to happen here. I think Logan Paul takes most of this match and does a whole lot of high flying stuff that looks impressive, flies through the table with it, tries to cheat LA Knight, does not have stupid babyface syndrome usually,
right?
And then he
knows how to out cheat it. I mean, I think the move here would be initially to have him as a babyface and then turn him midway through the title reign.
I think so too.
Yeah,
I think you're exactly correct on that. He's a good heel too, but
yeah,
he's selling so much merch right now. Why would you ever turn him?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he was on the precipice. He was selling so much merch last year
that it cooled him down.
And he had a new shirt coming out. It was 2 weeks after that title match. After they cooled him down, they dropped his shirt.
Yeah. Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley for the Women's World title. I am fascinated because, again, this entire program has been pretty fantastic. I know everybody and their grandmother thinks that Rhea's getting her title back here.
Hell no.
I don't. I think Dom's screwing
everything.
Her. Dom is screwing Rhea. And we're off to the races, kids. And
yep.
I can't wait. I am so looking forward to this Liv and Dom running for their lives from an angry Rhea Ripley. Give it to me. Give it to me every week, please. Because we're gonna have a lot of splits, I think, in the Judgment Day coming out of this pay-per-view, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, if for some reason they didn't split Dom and Rhea, and no one's rooting for Dom here, so if they for some reason kept them together, the only move would be that Liv's had a whole thing going with Finn this whole time and that she's hijacking the Judgment Day, and I still think she wins. Like, if Dom quote-unquote does the right thing, I think Finn comes out and goes like, okay, enough of this, and then just, you know, clowns Dom because Dom's a putz, and then, you know, Liv wins. But Liv's winning this title. She's not winning this title. She's retaining this title.
See, I don't think Finn gets involved in this one because I think he's involved with the Damian Priest one.
Well, I mean...
But it's interesting because in the story...
Win the title.
Yeah, in the story, it feels like it feels like Finn is going to screw over Dom at some point because he's been in canoodling with Liv because he had the hotel key this entire time. That's what it feels like.
Right. I mean, think about it from Finn's perspective here. And they've been pretty good at kind of planting seeds and then paying them off. Finn wanted to get the tag belts back with Priest. Priest was like, I don't care about any of that crap. You go and win the belts yourself. I'm focused on being a singles champion. Then Finn does, after many attempts and no help from Priest, get the belt back. Who helps him get the belt back? It's Liv Morgan.
Yeah.
Not Rhea Ripley. And then, like, he's had this thing going with Liv where he did visit the hotel room with Liv. I think Dom has never cheated on Rhea. That's going to be true, but the person who's
but he wants to.
But he wants to, but the person who's actually been sleeping with Liv is Finn.
Yeah, but I think Dom then burns it all down and to go with Liv, and Liv is kind of like, not anymore.
And Liv did that to screw over Rhea. The rest of the Judgment Day doesn't see any utility in Dom.
The rest of the Judgment Day are just dopes. You got JD great. And you got Carlito, and they don't care. They're just hanging out in the clubhouse playing video games.
They see no usefulness, though, in Dom, right? Like, they don't really, it's definitely Finn, Carlito, and JD McDonagh, and Dom's doing his thing, and Priest is doing his thing, and, like, I think that kind of is the foreshadow here.
Because we're taping this before SmackDown, or we've watched SmackDown, I have no idea how this is going to end, but there are a couple ways it could. For the WWE Women's Championship, your champion, Aunt Pam Bayley, taking on Nia Jax. Chris, who is the champion at the end of the night?
Bayley. No, Cashin, you tricked me. Tiffany Stratton.
She's getting a new briefcase via Nia this week. I think
actually, you know what? I think
Nia's taking the title because Tiffany hits Bayley with the briefcase. And so now we have Chekhov's gun hanging around Nia the entire time, with Tiffany being her friend, but waiting for the chance to cash in. That's what I'm thinking we're going with this.
I could also see this be like attempted cash in goes awry, Bayley's still champion at the end of the night.
Oh, you think she cashes in for the three-way and Nia gets mad and just takes out Tiffany?
She attempts to, but gets thwarted.
Okay.
And that's how Bayley retains. So, like, it's one of those finishes where Nia, yes, you have Tiffany Stratton out there constantly as Chekhov's gun, and Nia gets annoyed by that. And, like, that ends up being what costs Nia the match.
Quick plug for the WWE Vault channel on YouTube. They put out Mako Satomura's title shot against Bayley during their house show in Japan. I thought that was a banger. I really enjoyed that match quite a bit. And they obviously enjoyed it because on social media today they were asking possibly for a PLE match before Mako retires. I would dig that. I would dig a feud with them. Moving on, singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Damian Priest, your champion, versus Gunther. Is it Gunther's time? Because I think it might be.
It could be. I could see.
This feels like the overbooked mess. This feels like the one that the Judgment Day comes out and ends up accidentally screwing Damian Priest, but not really accidentally type of a thing.
Yeah, I don't, like, in a way, especially with the build here, Priest really does need the decisive win over Gunther, because Gunther's whole argument has been, you have never actually gotten a clean win. I think he beats Gunther. I think he stays. I think that the Judgment Day thing gets complicated and he stays champion.
Giovanni Vinci comes out. I've been looking for a way to book him somehow for his return, and he never does, but I don't know. Because Gunther's gotten the better of him in these backstage battles.
I think Priest prevailed.
I do too, but I think there's something janky about it. I don't think it's necessarily clean.
Yeah. Priest prevails, but the Judgment Day actually screws Gunther.
Yeah.
And that drives Priest crazy.
Yeah. Like he wants to take credit, or he thinks he got a clean win.
Yeah.
And so he's celebrating like it's a clean win, but really it was like Carlito spit an apple in his face or something like that.
And then Gunther has something to complain about constantly building to the rematch. And then you can take the title off of him. Oh, man. Like that could be the thing. Priest wants to win clean, and the Judgment Day won't let him.
And then what is the main event for me, at least? CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre with Seth Rollins and his ridiculous referee blouse. What the hell? Like, I love it. He goes, I'll take this referee shirt. I wanted Punk to just go, you mean the women's blouse that you're wearing that has black and white stripes on it? Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Shirts versus blouses.
Shirts versus blouses.
Win.
I think you nailed this last week or the week before. I think this is something where, look, they both have drama with Seth, and I think Seth has to reluctantly count three for Punk in some way.
Yeah.
To get the count. I think you nailed this. Of somewhat interest to me is this whole bracelet story, because it might be the harbinger of AJ Lee possibly coming back. And I think the end game here might eventually be CM Punk and AJ Lee versus Becky Lynch and Seth in a mixed tag, but I don't know that for sure. I'm thinking also possibly double turn here. Again, this story feels like Punk is going to continue to be a jerk no matter what, and Drew's just going to be tired of being angry all the time. I don't know if it happens during this match necessarily because of the special referee thing.
Yeah, no, I don't think this is not where the double turn happens. I mean, this could eventually morph into Punk taking it too far, but it's going to be really hard because Drew's been a patent jerk. Right up to and including not being able to say I'm sorry to the referees.
Yeah.
He's been cast as profoundly unsympathetic up to this point that it would take a lot of work to sort of walk it back. Like, he would actually have to, like, try making amends to Sheamus and then going to Pierce and apologizing and basically being like, look, I get it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then Punk's still Bugs Bunny being a prick.
Yeah, and that's where I think this story probably goes eventually. I don't think Seth actually turns on anybody or shows favoritism.
Yeah, I don't think he tips his hand here, right? I think that there's a lot of drama in the actual segment or in the match itself and in Rollins' officiating. We have moments of tension with both Drew McIntyre and also CM Punk. But ultimately, at the end of the match, Rollins is going to call it down the middle. He's going to, you know, see Punk end up hitting the GTS. Or maybe there's even something suspect in the finish before Punk gets the three. And Rollins has to count the 1, 2, 3, knowing that something's fishy about this, but not quite being able to put his finger on it.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Some of you almost got to watch me drown right there.
Yeah, but I...
You kept going because you were a professional.
A dexterous radio professional remembered vaguely how to be myself and stepped in.
Oh, God, that was terrible. Yeah, so that'll do it for SummerSlam. Enjoy. Now for the rest of the Lazy River, I will get my one big note out of the way. Really good week for women's wrestling. Some of it you'd have to seek out, but Chris, if I told you that on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, that in a, I believe it was a Texas death match, it was a hardcore match of some variety, that Layla Hirsch and Diamante absolutely went out there and killed it, would you be that surprised?
No, because that's like not a horrible pairing. And like Layla Hirsch with the right pairing can really come off as like a presence.
But Layla Hirsch, hardcore wrestler, like doing a moonsault off of a ladder or something.
Yeah. Okay. Like, all right. That does surprise me. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. That kind of stuff. I was after our show last week. I was, you know, hey, I'll buy the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Went there watching. I thought Queen Aminata and Ember Moon, not Ember Moon, Athena had a great match too, and Red Velvet won their secondary women's title. Good night for them. I thought the six woman on NXT was a fun party match, especially of the variety that NXT does. Not as much. I mean, there was some gymnastics because it was Sol Ruka involved in a lot of it, but JC Jane and
Jasmine Nix.
Well, no, the third. The
Peyton Royce.
No, not Peyton Royce. Peyton Royce. I almost said Peyton Royce. She was the Iconics.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The cowgirl. Whose name I can't remember right now. I should have written it down.
Hippley Patton.
Well, but nevertheless, the sixth woman on the Great American Bash was good. I really enjoyed Thea Hale and Roxanne Perez. I did. I thought they had a very nice little match. I just it's weird because they're both so tiny. I just can't see them on the main roster. But
Paxton Puxley,
Tatum Pax. No, Tatum Paxley is a goofy.
Oh, that's a different one.
Yeah, never. They do sound like Fallon Jedi.
Fallon Henley.
God, yes, they sound like stupid. These stupid George Lucas names that they freaking stop it. Jane Smith. And give her a nickname like the Terminator, Jane Smith. Oh, I'm going to go watch the Terminator today. No, instead I have to remember blah, 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 Lee. You know, Lee. There's a lot of Lees involved in these things. It's just.
Yeah, Brinley.
Brinley Reese. You know, Brinley, you know what it is? Everyone's name is a friggin' adverb in NXT. That's the thing that's driving me nuts. But yeah, no.
Whatever
I like.
What happened to Jaren's?
ING.
Yeah,
sure. Why not? I hate the women's name generator in NXT. I'm gonna kill somebody about, but Thea and Roxanne Perez, I thought killed it in the main event. I really enjoyed that. To you, sir.
All right. Let's go into AEW Dynamite because I have to say that my strongest reaction this week was to two of the talking segments on AEW. That left me just baffled. We'll start off, though, with the opening of the show here with Will Ospreay and MJF and the American Championship segment here. I have to question the wrestling wisdom behind going into South Carolina and trying to sell a South Carolina audience on booing the premise of an American championship while a guy with a thick Australian accent is, you know, cutting a promo and trying to explain the dream of the immigrant and how like there are all these people, some of whom are heels, who proudly represented this title that really meant nothing because it was just introduced like, I don't know, 18 months ago at most. And that there's this long, important legacy of internationalism that we as Americans care about. And that, like, it's like some weird bank shot that, like, you're degrading the belt from what it was by taking it from international to American. But again, you're selling all of this to an audience in South Carolina that likes wrestling. What the hell are we doing, Jeff?
This made no sense. They're telling us stories that don't exist. Number one, the All-Atlantic title wasn't exactly a sought after title. It was defended by Pac, like, I think once in the UK and once in Japan in DDT, I think. Meanwhile, Max has taken his American belt down to CMLL. So he's actually taking his title internationally, even though it's the American title. Number two, you're exactly right. None of these other guys are cutting promos on MJF going, oh, you've tarnished the legacy of this, the Workhorse Championship in AEW with every other title.
Let's not lie. Those would probably be lame. But, like, I actually think it would put some really interesting heat on MJF to have Roderick Strong just get into his face immediately.
It would, but this title has never meant that much.
Right. Like, no, I know.
Except
I know.
With Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is the only one who made this title even mean a damn thing, to be honest with you. And number two, but even before that, the entire premise of this thing is that Will is now angry that MJF is making fun of his dead grandmother. Whereas last week he was laughing about it. So that meant sometime during the week, during the off time, Will Ospreay is just walking down the street.
He realized that his grandmother's dead and he's never going to see her again.
I wasn't going to go there, but...
Well, yeah, no, and then all of a sudden he realized that
MJF was
being a real prick.
Wait a second. That thing MJF said was very, very mean and very, very wrong. Again. Huh. You know, when I get to work next Wednesday, I'm going to be pissed. And then we have Kyle Fletcher and Don Callis come out. And according to what I've been told... This segment wasn't originally supposed to be Kyle Fletcher. I don't know who it was supposed to be for, but whoever it was didn't make the town. I suspect it might have been Daniel Garcia, but he's not really re-signed yet, but people think he has, but I don't know. Number one, Kyle Fletcher looks ridiculous. He needs a hairstylist, and he needs somebody to help
what
with his
work. What is this look that he's doing? And, like, he has many
with the
looks.
The sockless shoes and stuff.
There's so many looks to Kyle Fletcher, and none of them are good.
No, it's horrible. I don't understand.
You can't even take, like, two different outfits of his and make one good outfit. You need at least three or four.
He's 6'4". He's good-looking, and he just looks like garbage.
The hair is horrible.
Yes.
The outfitting is also unflattering and goofy, and, like, why are we wearing a crop top? What is going on?
And he's cutting this impassioned promo when we know he's going to lose because he has no shot of winning. And we have Don Callis out there to make things kind of confusing, but I did like the weird handshake afterwards. Oh, bygones be bygones. But the thing that was missing was MJF never called out the fact that Don Callis was out there telling him, hey, Don, control your boy. Control your man out there, Don Callis. You heel. You part of the big heels faction here in AEW, even though Kyle Fletcher's acting like a babyface because he has friends. The thing that needed to be called out was MJF saying, talking to the other heel and saying, you need to control your man right there. Because I thought for certain Don Callis was going to give him a nut shot from behind and roll
out of
the ring.
I did too. I thought this was the setup to Callis kicking out Fletcher and siding with MJF, and MJF now has a new manager / built-in faction behind him supporting the belt.
That's all I have for this talking segment. Let's go to the other one.
Yeah. So you want to do Danielson and Swerve now?
Please.
All right. So what are we doing with Swerve Strickland? It has been such a wild ride over the last 6 weeks, and I'm not speaking just merely about my life. I am speaking about the week to week of one Swerve Strickland. From going hard role model on Juneteenth with the background and the entrance and all of the accoutrement around that, that was in the middle of June here, the third week of June, to now doing stuff where we routinely talk about people's family and using that to, you know, get a little bit of additional heat with whoever he's up against, to having him positioned against a living legend wrestler in Bryan Danielson, disrespecting him sort of, and like then putting Danielson in a career versus title match against Strickland, where by nature, unless for some reason the person putting their career on the line is a heel, and that's almost never the construct in one of these title versus career matches, by nature, you're rooting for the person whose yes. career is on the line. And Strickland is sort of blasé about the level of respect he even has for Danielson's career. He gave lip service to it. Oh, sure. But then he followed it up with, say hi to your birdie for me, or whatever it was at the end of his promo.
Yes, the guy, oh, remember, the guy who broke into Hangman's house and stared at his crib, and we're supposed to be booing Hangman for wanting to go after Swerve. Yes, that right. Swerve came back.
Absolutely unchastened by what he did to, I mean, right, like, even if you are unsympathetic to Adam Page in this world, and you should be, you can certainly go, like, to his behavior, you can certainly go, he got broken by Swerve Strickland being a horrible human being to his family. Like, Swerve crossed lines, and that's what cracked Adam Page. And so Swerve, trying to be a role model, has learned nothing from this. And he was doing the same crap with Will Ospreay a couple of weeks ago. This is like, it's like, whose house, Swerve's house, and say hi to your kids for me.
Yes.
These are like his two signature taglines.
Yes, and then they exposed the fatal flaw in Bryan Danielson, which I can't get over, but this happens every time, and it happened in WWE too. When we decide to make Bryan Danielson the underdog, the scrappy underdog, and he gets focused on proving, you know, on winning something, we make him an absolute jerk. So he goes backstage, and there's Jeff Jarrett to say, hey, man, attaboy, that's going all in. And then Bryan Danielson's basically looking at him going, I'm going to end your career next week in some way. Or at least he challenges him to a match where it doesn't seem it's going to be a friendly type of encounter with one baby face now Jeff Jarrett. But I think this might be the way to turn him back heel. But at the same time, we just turned a baby face. Why do we need to do that? We like Jeff Jarrett in this
right.
role.
Why turn Jeff Jarrett? Why create friction between Danielson and Jarrett? If anything, Jarrett and Danielson being aligned in this final run for Danielson, like with Jarrett sort of being the mentor to Danielson, and maybe even being the guy who goes like, are you sure you're really done? You know, I thought I was done too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like basically being the guy, he's like mentoring him the whole way. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be your guy the whole way down. Whenever you're ready to retire, you can retire. And then he's ultimately the guy who puts the fire back into him.
But I think all of this is kind of a red herring anyways, because I think based on the main event and what happened there, I think Hangman's coming out to take out Jeff Jarrett. And I think that's going to be the match at All In or All Out, one of the two. And that's actually a decent segue. I would love to see just a match where Darby Allin does nothing hardcore, because that springboard arm drag he has is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen during a match. But this match during the main event of AEW, number one, a first time ever match between Paige and Darby Allin, and it's not plugged, and it's not hyped up to hell all during the show.
I know, and it was a great match. Like, this is the thing that I always just find myself alternately frustrated with or scratching my head. This match was so entertaining and kind of could go either way. That like I was just like completely locked into this match. It was a great main event.
I was locked into it, but they. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I just found myself going like, why not plug this?
Yes.
Why not build to this? Why not make this matter somewhat? Put some stakes on this bad boy. Read it like a grill. Put a stake on it.
Have it be like a 2 hour long story if you have to. But this match also frustrated me a little bit because he does a coffin drop from the entrance like 3 minutes in. And that's your big spot. Because we don't want Darby, because Darby won't be diving through glass tonight. This is a TV taping. This is a pay-per-view. And we kind of have it mixed up a little bit with Adam Page not really knowing what his character's motivation is. Because he's not taking any joy in beating up Darby Allin. But he's also not, but they're also trying to tell the story instead of showing the story.
He just likes hurting people, I guess, is sort of the story.
No. They were on commentary saying he was hesitant about hurting Darby Allin because there were kids in the audience. And he didn't want to do that because of what happened with his kid with Swerve. And he doesn't want to disappoint his young fans. And I'm like, we're not seeing any of that on the TV, Excalibur. Excalibur's telling this story about how he doesn't want to hurt Darby because there are young people in the audience who look up to him.
This is my other sustaining critique of AEW, and this permeated through the whole show. I'm glad you spotlighted this because like that's the Excalibur way of making the show sort of like miss the beat for me or me check out from the show a little bit is that Excalibur finds himself telling stories that aren't happening on screen sometimes. Meanwhile, Taz has emotional reactions completely divorced of emotion. Like this week he said like, wow, that was sick. Like as in like disgusting, like perverse, like this person is warped and twisted in the head, but he said it with all of the passion that you might say about a jar of mustard that appears to be like sitting out for about an hour, you know, like not an hour, like a day.
Great Poupon Jones over here.
Yeah. Oh man, that's sick. That mustard is gross. I'm going to throw it in the trash. Like, yeah, no, it's, you know, you're not like revolted and disgusted by it. You're not, you know,
we've brought this
what
up
has
before.
Gotten into this mustard?
We've brought this up before where Tony has an idea for this angle. And they're getting it over on commentary. And the stuff that's on TV has nothing to do with what they're saying on the commentary. And we just kind of watch a bit. And it's like, all right, they're going to go with this as a story. And they're going to try and do it for 2 weeks. And they're going to drop it because they realize nobody believes them because it didn't happen on the screen.
Well, yeah. And it doesn't seem like Hangman's trying to tell that story. So, like, I don't, you know, where the hell are we getting the story from?
Yeah.
That's not the style that Hangman's working right now. Right now, Hangman's, to me, working a match style that is so focused on hurting the opponent that it sometimes even costs him the match because to him, the whole point of having a match is it gives him a chance to beat up somebody.
I, in a sick way, I loved this learning tree segment this week because I think now Chris Jericho has just finally bought into the bit of what wrestling tropes can I do to tick people off and to try and make it work. We have a birthday cake segment for 102 days, not 100, 102, because this makes it really special. And then they actually bring up the whole thing of, usually when you see a cake, it gets smashed in somebody's face, and then they don't do it. And Alex Marvez gets to eat the cake, and everybody walks away. And Jim Cornette's rolling over in his grave, and I'm fine with that. I needed Alex Marvez throughout the show to be seen in the background eating the cake. That's all I needed to make this perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the point of the learning tree stuff is still, and
it's just for Chris Jericho to be a jerk on TV.
Yeah, right. And the problem for me again gets back to it requires Taz to be offended and distressed, and requires Taz to do anything where he pretends like he's paying half attention to this show, and he's not. So that's a bad thing to do.
I'm trying to think of other tropes he could do to not pay off to do it. Like he could, you know, I've brought in a mystery partner in this gift box or a mystery guy. And he opens it as just some dude who's, he's joining the production team this week. Oh no, it's not a wrestler. It's not a special guest star. It's a guy who works in our graphics department. Give it up for him.
Or like build to a miss, you know, special partner, you know, mystery partner tag match. And then he decides as the match begins just to send back the mystery partner and just bring out Brian Keith. The guy comes out in a mask, like all black mask. And Jericho's like, eh.
We're going to have a scaffold match.
I got to be honest. I don't really feel comfortable tagging with you.
Yeah, you're a mystery to me. I can't handle this.
I need someone I know. I need Big Cass. Yeah.
We're going to have a scaffold match. And beforehand, Osha's going to come out and go, this seems unsafe. You should just have a straight wrestling match. I don't know. I liked it. This week's AEW was such a, it wasn't a bad show and it wasn't a good show. It was a show that was there. Like I
know the rest. I mean, it's like the standard AEW formula, only maybe a little bit better executed on the wrestling side, where the wrestling is good, generally speaking, but it was the talking and like story building segments that just left you absolutely baffled by what they're doing.
I'll continue on that. Cause for, as much good. I liked Camille's debut. I thought she should have gotten a little bit more murder-deathy because I didn't understand what that thing on the top rope she was doing was, but her gear looks great. She looked great. I liked the story. And then you counterbalance that with whatever the hell that Mariah May thing was. I wore her skin.
Okay, Hannibal Lecter.
My good friend Buffalo Bill, or Hannibal Lecter, yes. And then you had Tony coming out, and I think she's morphing into Betty Davis from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, but don't quote me on that. But this is how they're deciding to build this big match in Wembley.
I think
me with it.
Well, it's gonna be an interesting case of mime over matter.
Oh God, I may have to clip that one. Yeah, your turn. Anything?
All right.
NXT, if you want.
I guess we can go NXT. I continue to hate the Oro Mensah Ethan Page storyline.
Yes.
You can pin Ethan Page in little stupid situations like this 1,000 times, and it doesn't do anything to improve Oro Mensah. It just diminishes Ethan Page.
Yes.
And I find myself entertained but confused by Joe Hendry.
Okay. Expand.
I think the act is mostly a heel act, that this guy is very much huffing his own farts.
Huh.
And that, I mean, the idea that this dude thinks that he's deeply motivational and he wants to come out and do a concert, like we need to have a Joe Hendry concert, and then he sits down and plays the equivalent of Wonderwall skill level guitar and like sings a song about himself. And like there's a lot about the Joe Hendry energy that to me is fundamentally heelish, like Simon Diamond, disingenuous, motivational speaker sort of thing. And I have a hard time fully getting on board with it. I find it entertaining, but I actually was muttering the song to myself today while I was editing something else, and my roommate heard me like from his bedroom, and then he came out. I was like, so you believe in Joe Hendry, do you? Because I was just like sitting there and I'm like, say his name and he like there's something deeply catchy about
that. And then a tiny Scottish man.
Liked it. Yeah,
tiny Scottish man with a giant mustache now, which is what Gallus has become.
Yes. No, Joe Coffey has completely turned into an early 20th century silent film villain where like he has like the floppy hair.
He's turning into big Bully Busick with the bowler hat. Yes.
And a little bit like Yosemite Sam and Big Bully Busick sort of rolled together where it's like, Tarnations! Ah!
Tarnations. I want to hear him say Tarnations in a Scottish accent.
Joe Coffey, Tarnations!
Oh, jeez. Yeah, the Scottish on Scottish violence, I get enough Drew McIntyre. I don't need it here. Yeah, I have no other notes for any of this week's wrestling. Do you?
I mean, obviously with Hendry, we're ultimately building to him versus Paige, which I think is fine. But yeah, I found myself sort of scratching my head on a little bit more of the rest of the show. You know, Kendall Gray is like a, you know.
Kendall Gray is Tim Horner, 1986-87. She has wrestling chops, but she is the most vanilla babyface with skills I've seen. It's one of those types of things where it's like, yeah, she's pretty and she can wrestle, but there is nothing to her. And they've and they've teamed her with another generic blonde who smiled and did cheerleading. And you're like, all right, give me something.
And I know.
You don't get anything.
I know. If the direction is, you know, now is more about skill development than character development, okay, I guess I'll give them a pass a little bit. But like, man, I just have a hard time even, you know, distinguishing these names. And it's like we were like searching for Fallon Henley earlier because everyone's just run through this Dubba Bubba, you know, like two syllable.
They're different names, but they're not interesting names at all.
Lumley. Yeah, you know, like
Harley Bright. Nobody's named that.
Right. And especially now with that spelling, even. You know, I do want to give one up to the show for sure.
Oh, wait a second. Before you do that, let me cut you off and get one more thing on Kendall Gray. Because I think this could work, but the only way this works really, really well is if you continue to beat Carly Gray, but she's like competitive, but she keeps getting beat by quote unquote stars. And then one day she has a match with whoever the champion is, be it Roxanne, or if you want to do this with the North American champ, you can do it that way. And she pins her. And then you start doing a character thing with her. But otherwise, I don't see the point of this character. But now continue.
Yeah, now to go to Roxanne, actually. I thought Roxanne and Thea Hale really brought it.
Yes.
Roxanne got a great performance out of Thea Hale, and Thea Hale more than capably performed her part. I never thought that Thea was going to win, but man, those near falls were good. There was just she has a great looking Michinoku driver. Thea's got some serious talent in the ring, and I thought this was a really nice coming out party for her to show that. It did show from a viewer standpoint that she has really leveled up as a talent in the ring. She's a good talent. She's an interesting one to keep an eye on.
I liked her hammerlock. I like that they've continued the hammerlock story from when she trained that a couple weeks with the No Quarter Catch crew.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I think they're both good. And she's back to the gimmick, and that's a good thing. Whenever she's just hyperactive Thea Hale, she's fantastic. And yeah, no, I really enjoyed this match as well. Ready for Vader Club? I don't have a lot to say about Vader Club, but I liked the match a lot.
Yeah, I was kind of in the same situation. I liked the match a lot. I love
Let me introduce it first.
Sure, absolutely.
It's Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen versus Jumbo Tsuruta, and I won't try his first name because I always botch it, but Tenryu.
Isn't it Junichiro?
I think it is. I think you're correct on that. From 19, I believe this is actually 1983, but it's dated 1984 from the Real World Tag League Finals of All Japan Professional Wrestling. Jeff, why did you pick this? Well, number one, I did the Chris Novembrino sort of way to pick a match. I thought of somebody I wanted to watch, and then I went to the Internet Pro Fight database, and while Chris looks for 5-star matches, I look for things that are about 4.5, 4.75.
I can't say I look for 5 stars. I just, because it doesn't let me sort that easily. Like I end up just kind of like scanning their career and seeing.
I click star ratings and I click all, and then it lists all the star ratings and stuff. But I want something a little bit rough around the edges. I don't want something perfect. I just want something that feels like a fight. And I felt like watching guys beat each other up, and these are guys that will beat the crap out of each other. And also, I really wanted to see something from Tenryu. Tenryu is one of those blind spots I have, along with Jumbo Tsuruta. Because all I remember of Tenryu is that he was the guy the Road Warriors picked to be the NWA 6-man champs with them when they turned on Dusty Rhodes. And he looked awesome. And I went, oh, Tenru. Tenru's awesome. And then I saw him in like he was like in a Royal Rumble. Well, he was in that Royal Rumble the year that that the entire crew decided that big crew of guys decided to take out the Undertaker at the end of the show. And he was one of the two Japanese guys along with Diesel and Jeff Jarrett. And I think Yokozuna was involved in that too. And you thought it was gonna be a revenge story eventually and never came to pass. But I also look, I haven't watched a lot of Bruiser Brody. I've watched some. I know he and Dave Meltzer were friends. I know he has one of the more interesting backstories to me in the world in that he was a sports journalist who decided to become a professional wrestler. Very well spoken. Forehead that just looks like cheese grater. But if you want to watch guys beat each other up, you put on Stan Hansen, because Stan Hansen's really going to beat you up because he's half blind and can't see you. And that's what this was. This was and I love All Japan. I was watching. I almost gave you another match, but I didn't want you to say it's just four Japanese guys in black trunks and black knee pads hitting each other. But that's what you get with All Japan in terms of the Japanese wrestlers: black trunks and black knee pads. And boy, Brody and Hansen and these two smacked the crap out of each other. And it was a giant bowl of macaroni and cheese on a Saturday afternoon for me. I desperately loved this. I liked the aftermath of it with the Funks coming out and Terry and Dory, who always looks 83 and whatnot. But it's just a fun, hard-hitting, very good tag team match available on YouTube if you want to look it up. Any thoughts?
Yeah, Hansen has some great suplexes throughout this match.
Yes.
He actually shows off that he was a good suplexer in addition to all of the hard-hitting. I love Hansen's knee drop. It always looks really good. And I loved the spot where Bruiser Brody was in the octopus and Hansen just comes off the ropes and it's coming. And he come for that lariat. Oh, it's great.
What I really liked too. I love the double, I want to call it a Hayabusa kick, but I can't think of the Japanese. I always call it a back brain kick. Because of Fighter Hayabusa in Nintendo's Pro Wrestling. But I love that as kind of a pseudo finisher. And when you put that like up with like the double drop kick, but the double back kick to the back of the head that they did on that Tsuruta and Tenru did on both Brody and Hansen, I thought that was really neat looking. Now this match ends in a DQ, which kind of sucks. But at the same time, I mean, you don't want to beat anybody in this match after all that. I thought this was a proper ass kicking for four different guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it got to the result that they wanted, which is the babyfaces win. You protect the heels. I thought the heels for their part were just really entertaining. Like this is good quality gaijin performance here with them never looking scared or afraid, but like the kind of showing some ass at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they're tough, but that they're not exactly overpowering the fight
right
the entire time. And that's why I like mean guys doing mean things to each other. But, yeah, I needed this. And
I found it was a very entertaining match.
And there was a nice little prologue before that basically even, it's not in English, but here are some highlights from the tag league that led us to this point right now. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, so Chris will select something for next week, but we're going to cut it off there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can follow Chris only on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV.
Not only on Instagram anymore, Jeffrey.
Oh, are you on Blue Sky?
No.
What are you
on? I'm on Spotify.
Ah,
yeah, that's right. I actually released an EP of punk songs onto Spotify. I now have a way of distributing my music onto Spotify. So go and follow it. If you want to give me a pity follow, leave it streaming all night while you're asleep. If you want to give me courtesy listens and let's all work together to get me up to upwards of 3 digits in listens here. Let's do it.
No, you can also follow him if you like him on Spotify. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show, about 20 minutes after the show. We go live on YouTube. Myself and Paul A. Fontaine drops in your podcast catchers the next morning for audio. Chris, would love for you to have your own Spotify channel if you'd like to play music. And you won't need to ask for pity listeners if you have him teach guitar and other things, right, Chris?
I mean, I'm still asking for pity. No, yes, no, that would never happen. You,
I'm hard selling this for you. Do it.
No. Absolutely. Get guitar lessons from me. Your friend, Chris Novembrino. Follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/DOCTOR_NOV. Dr. Nov is my name-o.
Enjoy SummerSlam.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.